a nice picture.
Thank you very much. I'd like to call this special meeting of the Community Services District Board to order. We could dispense with the meeting. It would be Pledge of Allegiance from the regular meeting. Am I correct? Thank you. Okay, Carol, can you call roll, please?
President Simon?
Here.
Vice President Steele?
Here.
Director Graves?
Here.
Director Pease?
Here.
Director Wiesen?
Here.
Thank you, and I will dispense with public comment as there is no public in the room. At this point, we will go to item C, which is open session disclosure of closed session agenda, Government Code Section 54957.7. And at this time, we will go into closed session.
The board is now adjourning into closed session regarding action item D1 and D2, there being no public comment. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
I have 484 hours of vacation.
Okay, thank you. Please. At this point, I would like to take us back into open session. Legal?
Thank you, Mr. President, board members. The board has reconvened from closed session regarding action items D1 and 2. All five of the board members were present during the entirety of the closed session. There is no reportable action on either item at this time. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. At this point, we will return to open session. I will adjourn this meeting until 7 o'clock. Good evening. Welcome to the Community Services District Board meeting for the 19th. If you please join Kevin in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Carol, could you call roll, please?
President Simon?
Here.
Vice President Steele?
Here.
Director Graves?
Here.
Director Pease?
Here.
Director Wiesen?
Here.
Thank you. This brings us to public comment. The public may comment on any item on the agenda that is before the board for consideration. Any person wishing to speak must come up and speak from the podium. There will be no dialogue between the board and the commenter. Any clarifying questions from the board will go through the chair. Any public comment? I'd say no. Okay, we'll move on. Open session disclosure of, I meant the wrong one, hello. I always do that. I'm sorry, I'm worried about myself. Okay, there are no presentations tonight? Rick?
Nope.
Thank you. President's report, director's comments. Mary Ann, we're showing projected costs for foundation, is that you?
I think Chris is going to speak on that tonight.
This way?
I think Chris is gonna.
Okay, the only comment, I just want to give you guys an update to keep you, that we're still getting organized and getting our paperwork together, so. Probably nothing new for another month on that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Kevin, Anna? Bill? Marianne?
And I'll just comment on the health and wellness fair. It's really falling into place, doing very good. So.
Good, thank you.
It will be a success.
Consent calendar, can I get a motion, please?
So moved.
Second.
Thank you. Any comment? Call for the vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you. F, discussion and action items. National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System, our NPDES permit. Renewal application package. Rick?
Thank you. As Greg comes to the podium, you'll recall that at our last board meeting, Greg gave the board a pretty extensive summary of the new permit that was presented to us from the regional board on March 10th, or in February, I'm sorry. And we have responded to that. You received a copy of that letter under separate cover. It's also attached to this report, and subsequent to that, Gregory's had a number of conversations with the state regional water board, and tomorrow Vice President Steele, Director Graves, myself, and Gregory Harris, as well as I believe Eric from Stantec, Ziegler?
Yes, and
both of them will be meeting with the regional board to discuss with them our requested methodology, and so Gray's going to kind of get into that for you and explain it and answer any questions you may have.
Okay, great. Gregory Harris, Sherwood Engineering. I'm a district engineer. So last time we kind of said, hey, they really threw a lot of stuff at you in this permit, and we kind of developed a strategy of let's at least try and maybe commit to the filters since those were planned and push everything off to the next permit cycle. I mean, basically admit to it, basically say we'll get it done, but try and give us time to do it, you know, kind of thing. So in order to do that, we had to submit what's called kind of a feasibility report. And the long and short of it is a feasibility report is an excuse. Why can't I do it? And then an answer of, well, if you can't do it now, when can you do it? Okay, so we're not going to bore you with the excuse. We made up a bunch of, you know, a lot of reasons. A lot of it has to do with predominantly, we're saying financing. So basically, like, the party line is, hey, we knew about filters a long time ago. We started planning for them. We started working them into our financing plan. And we were prepared when the permit came out and said you need to have filters. So given a little bit more time and allowed flow increase, we'll have the revenue in place to put the filter project in place. That's our story on that. All this other stuff is out of the blue. Never saw it before. Never heard it before. Now you're asking us to spend millions again. And then we need time. We need time to be able to do that. So the letter that you have there basically is the letter that we wrote in response to the permit when it came out. You know, so that letter pretty well states the case. You know, we can do some of this stuff. We need more time to properly consider and finance some of these other items. Okay? So the feasibility analysis is sort of a technical backup that gives them the permission to argue against other people that might want these stringent requirements right now, other agencies, other like SPA F, other groups, NGOs, et cetera, that might want our permit to be more restrictive right away. They need some technical background to say, nope, it's okay, they need more time to do this. That's what the infeasibility analysis says. They basically bought off on the technical arguments and we started arguing over how long we need this morning. So at 8:30 this morning, like, okay, that's too long, you know, why can't you do this instead? And the culmination of that is this revised table from the infeasibility analysis right here. Okay, so table two. So what's important to the district here is we're not adopting, you know, essentially they didn't give us the option to say, no, we don't want the limit, or the limit's inappropriate. Okay, we already told them the limit's inappropriate. They said, yeah, we don't care. You're going to do it anyway. So now we're arguing for time. But what's important about this is these dates put in real financial obligations upon the district. We tried to push them out a long ways. Okay, but this is not a light document. This document here is committing the district to spending a lot of money. So we want to make sure everybody's on board when we march into the regional board tomorrow and say, this is what we're willing to do, or this is what we propose. Now, they may not buy everything we ask for, but we're going to start by asking for this. Okay, but this is like our starting negotiating point. They may vary take it verbatim. They may notch it down a little bit. They may disagree, and then we'll see. What's important is staff will ultimately make a recommendation for a permit. That permit then goes out for public circulation. So staff could say, okay, maybe the regional board and Discovery Bay likes this schedule timeline, and maybe we agree with it, and we're gonna put it in the permit just like they wrote it up, okay? It's then gonna go out to public comment, and other agencies or other vested interests are allowed to comment on it, and you know, they may put pressure to change some of these requirements. They may put pressure to say, do it sooner, or they may put pressure of some other kind for whatever political purpose or gain that they have, usually political. You know, sometimes the other agency will, hey, you made me do it right away, now you're letting them off on a 10-year schedule, what's up? You know, another agency might say that. Or SPA F has always argued the stringent limits should go in right away and you should make them pay. That's SPA F's Sports Fishermen Alliance, SPA F. That's their kind of motto, okay? So, that's basically how it's going to go, and then I wanted to just briefly kind of go through some of these dates with you so you guys got an understanding of what we're talking about. So essentially, the strategy is we planned for filters, we were working on a financial plan for filters, and filters are feasible for us, so this is how we're going to do it. We're going to design them, we're going to start design as a point of good faith, we're going to continue our financing, and essentially work towards June 30 of 2016, they have sufficient financing in place to actually begin the construction. Then we would begin construction and we'd have them completed by December 31st, 2017. Okay. So what's important about that date is our permit renews for 5 years, and I basically picked it as like, how far can I stall it and still put it in this permit as a sign of good faith, you know, and sort of match that balance. you know, there, you know, versus they could say, well, do it in 2 years. I mean, theoretically, you could go and get it done. 2 years, we're saying we planned for it, but we planned for it after a flow increase, and we planned for it after we collected the collection fees, and this is all how it works, so work with us on it. I think they're going to buy it, okay? So when I spoke with Jim Marshall this morning on the phone, Jim Marshall, the regional board, who we're going to meet with tomorrow, he seemed okay with the end dates, and that's what's important here. We didn't have this much detail. We just put an end date. In this case, for the filters, we said December 31st, 2017. And you're like, that feels okay to me. So put some more detail
around it. The letter that went out last week?
The feasibility analysis went out on Monday.
Right.
So it's a follow-up to your letter. So if you look at your letter, the first letter that went out was just a straight response to the permit.
Right.
They came back and said, give us proof why you need more time. We need a quote in feasibility analysis. That went out on Monday. They commented us back this morning. This is a revision to the feasibility analysis. It basically adds more dates, more interim steps. That was really their comment. We need more interim steps. We don't just want an end date, and then we come back and check with you in 9 years. How'd it go? And, you know, they want
to
see something.
Guess what? We haven't started yet.
Yeah, exactly. So they're going to put these dates, like these interim dates, they're going to go into permit. So, like, if you don't complete design by this date, for instance, they're going to come back and say, your permit says you got to be done by this date, C&D, get on it, kind of thing. That's what they're going to do. And that's true for all these local
projects. Are violations of these dates findable?
Violations are not finable. They would issue a C&D, and then ultimately, if you cease and desist. Yeah,
okay.
So they will issue, like, if you don't comply, they'll issue a cease and desist and notice of violation. Okay. Immediately, it wouldn't be finable unless you still continue to not make progress, and then they would come back and they can find you.
Craig, if you're making substantial progress, but you're just not gonna make that date.
Yeah.
Would they be flexible in something like that?
Yeah, if we had an excuse and a story and we gave them a letter and showed progress, and, you know, hey, we're not the first people to ask for more time. Okay. So, now what's also important about this strategy is that basically we've tried to say, we'll get the filters done in this next 4 years, essentially. Everything else we want to occur after that period into our next permit. What is advantageous about that is, as we get into it, if we want to fight it, we actually have time. You know, you could theoretically have time to build a scientific basis, maybe have time for a legal challenge, you know, something. So there's a possibility you could fight it if the board so chose. But we're kind of giving some to get some, trying to give them some to get some. Because right now, it's all supposed to be done in the next 4 years, the next 5 years. I mean, based on all of this, and there's a lot of stuff. So basically, that's the schedule on the filters. And of course, the filter project, you know, it's like $5 million, right? So I forget what it is. But it's
4.2,
not,
but
well, there's a little piece to it. It's a little more than 4.2, I thought. It's like 4.6.
And remind me, that's not part of the bond money, but it was budgeted for, or there was. Remind me what our financing is on that, please.
The financing on that is that a portion of it is new construction, and a portion of it is not new construction. So as developer fees come in and come online, capacity fees, those fees would then offset the cost of this project. So if you take Newport Point and Pantages in their entirety, and if all units were sold, there would be enough money generated to cover this project. And you could do that. One of the things we're going to have to do, and I mentioned last week, we're going to be coming back to the board, once the permit is finalized and we know what all these new numbers are going to be, to incorporate some of these additional costs into a capacity fee. So we'll be coming back to you with an updated capacity fee revision at probably $500-$600 a unit.
Which will only affect Pantages.
Which will only affect new construction.
New construction, but not Village 4.
Only new construction.
Well, part of it would affect
part of
Hoffman.
Part of it, yes.
But the question I would have to ask you, what if Pantages doesn't build in the next 4 years? What if Newport Point sells out and they don't build?
We still have to build it.
But where's Kevin asked a legit question.
Yeah.
Where's the money going to come from?
Someone's going to have to play banker, and it's probably going to be us through a transaction, whether it be through a traditional bank, whether it be through the CSDA Finance Corporation, whether we fund it out of our reserves partially and get reimbursed. So there's a number of ways to do it. Fortunately, we've got a couple of years.
You have the other one coming in right
so
now on top of it.
June 30th of 2016. You got 2 years to put
together. I understand it, but you've got the other one coming in right on top of it for 2017, 2019, which is millions. You've got one scheduled for 2020-21, which is millions. I mean, we're already on the hook for 14 million in bonds. Where's this money coming from?
We, regardless of whether or not new construction comes, we still have to build it regardless. So we're going to have to figure out how to pay for it.
Which also brings the point that we, how do we,
there's, you could put both projects in and you could bond it. You could do the same thing we did before. If interest rates are favorable, you could refinance the current projects into a new one, into
you're
a new
still gonna make payments on it.
What's that?
You're still gonna make payments on it. I mean, it's
of course.
I mean, it's not like
it's gonna come from the ratepayers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
it's partially.
Yeah. Partially.
Let's put it this way.
Completely.
You're raising rates.
Borrowed or not, it comes from the ratepayers.
If your budget's balanced now, you're raising rates to pay for this.
Yeah.
That's
what no, I agree. Yeah.
So that's what's important here, that the public know that you know, this wasn't the board just saying, I feel like spending a lot of money. Okay, this is the state coming in saying, this is what your premium plan needs to do now, and this is what you're going to have to spend to get there. And what we've tried to do is, this is our essential strategy. Pantages and Newport Point are very hot right now. Hot enough that they're willing to lay an assessment district down and pre-fund all of their connection fees. Okay, so if we got them to pre-fund all of their connection fees because they think they're going to sell and do all this stuff, we issue them a will serve, they pre-fund all their connection fees, we get three quarters about of the money that we need to build the filters. Okay, you're going to have to make up another $1 million somewhere, all right, and maybe Hoffman builds some, we get some flex about other things, but you're three quarters of the way there. That gets the filters in this four-year time cycle that's kind of on the paper here. Everything else we've tried to push into the next permit, okay? And then, you know, that does give the board opportunity, you know, if like, well, we just don't want to spend the money, well, then you can pay for science and try and legally argue out or technically argue out of those conditions entirely, okay? So I'm not saying you'll be successful. I'm saying it's a strategy, all right? But no matter what, the regional board was very clear, we're not changing the requirement, we'll give you time, but that's it. That's what your comment back to us is, how much time you need to comply, you know. Now, it's gonna go before the regional board. There's gonna be a board that votes on this permit. You can stand up and we will. Maybe this is too restrictive. This doesn't seem right to us and we'd like a lesser standard. Okay, but it's not what staff's gonna hand them. And staff's gonna hand them the report that's written right now. So, maybe we'll be successful, maybe we're not. And most people are rather unsuccessful on board day in the meeting saying, go against staff recommendation and change this instead.
I'm sure.
Yeah. All right. So because there's other people that's there, they're going to argue, you're giving them too much time, do it shorter. You know, and it happens. There's a lot goes on in these meetings.
The other concern that I have, along with the money, I mean, I understand we don't have any choice but to build it. We're going to have to do it. But we're going to get into our next permit cycle in 5 years. We don't know what's coming in that permit cycle. And if we're on the hook for millions for this one,
not much more than can come.
Well,
I don't know.
Yeah,
it'll be Title 22 after this, right?
Yeah, the reality is they're making you into a tertiary Title 22 facility, and essentially what we're asking for is like a 9-year compliant window overall to get there. So really, I don't know what's left. You know, I mean, there's something out there that we don't know about. They may come up with.
They'll find something new to grab for, I'm sure.
And how does that compare to other? Special districts, wastewater especially special districts in the Delta of our size that has our capacity, how many of the rest of those are Title 22 or projected to be Title 22?
Well, Rio
Vista, there's a bunch of us around.
Yeah,
there's
Rio
150
Vista,
of these little small districts.
Brentwood's Title 22.
But they're not small.
Rio Vista's small.
Okay, what's Rio Vista?
Rio Vista's smaller than you.
And they are Title
22. Mm-hmm. A lot of it has to do with what part of the Delta you discharge into. Different parts of it have different issues. And in general, we've got a lot of flow that goes by us, so they've allowed us a lot of pollution. Well, in this permit, they're coming back and saying we're taking away all the pollution because of federal guidelines and a bunch of other things. So they're kind of discounting that river. We have this massive body of water out there, you know, and, you know, even Jim Marshall admits, you know, Title 22 is a bit restringent for what you're doing, but that's what the rules are, so we're going that way. You know, we're not saying you don't necessarily have a good argument. We're just saying this is the way we see it, this way it's going to be, you know, kind of thing. So, but the cruel reality is they're forcing you to spend money to upgrade these facilities, and they are not cheap. You know, these are millions of dollars we're talking about, what we're trying to do is push them off enough until maybe two things happen. Like, we remember they were all over us about aluminum a while back, and they were really, really honest about salinity. This showed up, they just dropped aluminum completely, and salinity's not a big deal suddenly. You know, so our other strategy is if we can at least push it in the next cycle, maybe the hysteria over nitrate calms down, and the board's in a more amenable position when that permit comes around, you know, and, you know, maybe there's some give there. Right now, there doesn't appear to be a lot of give there. Maybe in 5 years, there's a little more give. But, so that's what our strategy is. But if it doesn't work, and whether they build homes or not, this is going in your permit, and then it's going to carry into the next permit automatically because it's written into this one. All right, so that's what's important about the board here is these are not light obligations on the surface that are being picked up. So copper is, you know, it was kind of a weird one. The the maximum copper we've discharged is 45 milligrams a liter. We've done it twice. So they gave us a permit limit of 44. So we're like, well, why would you go one underneath what we do just so we can violate? And there's not a lot we can do about it. So we basically came up with an excuse for doing some studies and just buy more time, you know, kind of thing. The filters, we think, might help that.
We average 44.5?
No, we don't average, but it's our maximum.
How often do we hit it?
We hit it twice in the 5 year period that they give us. So well, I mean, it's a $6,000 fine, so you know we're like
right, pay the fine, don't build the.
Well, and we might, but basically, I'm trying to argue out for 4 years of not paying the fine, and then we deal with it then. And if you got to pay the fine every 4 years, and let's put it like, the filters might reduce your copper a little bit, so it might just get you there. But there's nothing else you can do. We already banned water softeners. We already banned copper plumbing. You know, I told them on the phone, what do you want me to do? It is what it is. You know, it is what it is. So that one, we're just basically arguing for more time just to reduce the period of exposure that you might be fine. You know. Then we have nitrate. This is the one we really try to push out the most. Okay, so this is nitrification, denitrification. It wasn't in the master plan. It wasn't in your financial plan. It's a total out of the blue deal. You know, it's $3 to $4 million to do this. And there is physical space there. It can physically be done. And these, but again, the permit limits are really, really tight, and it's gonna, you're going to have to really have a good design to be able to pull this off. So we basically try to push it off to where your financing plan doesn't even have to be completed until after this permit cycle. And maybe they rethink nitrate between now and then. Maybe they don't. But, you know, this is the commitment on building nitrate. Total call form is where they're fully taking you into Title 22. So not only did you build filters, but we want you to disinfect instead of 23 MPN, 23 most probable number per 100 milliliters, which is what your standard is now, add the filters, and we want you to do even better, get it down to 2.2. So just as a background, remember when we had this little bypass over here, we measured the river at 1,600. So we're making the water better. We're diluting Old River with our effluent. Okay, that's what we're doing.
Greg, if the filtration gets us down to 2.2, we would not need to do this, correct?
Yes, it's also a hedge on my part. Technically, the UV system, in conjunction with the filters, way back when we designed it, 10 years ago when we put it in, we made upgrades since then, is supposed to make us Title 22 once we had the filters. Our concern is we've had so many issues with the UV, we've always tweaked it and done all this stuff, that we're not confident you might get it, that you can truly hold a 2.2 standard. So what we've told the regional board is, hey, there might be a lot of UV upgrades, we need time to finance that, we need planning, and that whole story. So we're basically trying to push it off. I don't know if they'll push it off. There's a 75% chance it really doesn't cost us any money, but it costs us fines, because 2.2 is such a low number that one little mistake and, you know, you blow it. Kind of like we have now. You know, we always seem to have a few back key violations every year, no matter how many times. There's always a story, but it still happens. You know, there's always a story, but it always still happens. So I don't know if they're going to push back. I don't know if they'll give us that date, but basically I told them a bunch of UV upgrades might be needed, as much as $1 million. And we need time to integrate that and finance a plan around it, because it's not in anything we're doing right now.
Greg, the point that Rick just brought up and that we had talked about before offline about how we're actually diluting the poor quality of the delta by putting our wastewater into it.
Yeah.
They don't care about that. That means nothing to them, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, let's put it this way. The nitrate standard came to us because they don't have any proof that there's mussels in Old River right by us. But somewhere in the Delta, they found these mussels, and mussels have a problem with nitrates. And so by extraction, we might have mussels, and therefore we might have a problem with nitrates, and therefore you're going to spend $4.5 million.
Probably has nothing to do with fertilizer, too, either, I imagine.
That's why. It's literally mussels. That's the reason. So here's the thing that we're even thinking about. Okay, if we can push this up 4 or 5 years, we can go do a mussel survey in the river. And if we can go show within 700, 800 feet up and down the river, there are no mussels in Old River where we discharge, we may be able to take the meat out of that argument, but we need time to do that. You know, we need time to do that. And so we're basically like trying to comply by time and then scheming in the background, well, how do we get out of this down the road? Maybe, no guarantees on that, maybe. They go out there, find one mussel, you're done, it's gonna have to go in at some point, okay? But the permit limit based just on supposition is a bit extreme, but that's where it is. And then diazinon aquarium propolis, that's basically fertilizer, those are insecticides. And I don't know why, it's a federal guideline now, it's just going in every permit, and it's never been measured, we've never actually had a requirement before, we've never ever tested for it in our wastewater, and they just threw it in. So we just threw in some schedules around and said we need more time and, you know, call it a day. So all said and done, though, this piece of paper with the filters at, you know, like 4.6 million and the nitrate at 4.8 million and the UV if we got to do a million, but, you know, it's a $10 million piece of paper. That's what this is. We get to spread it out. Maybe we can dodge something. Maybe attitudes will change down the time. But on the surface, in your permit, is going to be a $10 million price tag. And we want to sure all important. So,
left of a bake sale.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
We're selling license plates again. Now that we got the community center, we can divert the funds.
The all of the dates on here, staff yourself has selected those dates as far out as you think you can.
Well, I picked them as far out as I thought I could get them.
And I pushed them out even further.
And then Rick said, out of here.
All right.
So I don't know if they'll agree to them. And yes, in this morning's call, they said, you know, we don't have a lot of heartache with
so they, the they've end seen this paper.
They saw the end date. They saw a simpler form of this table. Okay. It was the document that was sent out that you got a copy of.
Right.
But we just said, like, oh, we need to do all this stuff. And, you know, we would just say, okay, December 31st, 2017.
Right. So this filling in the blanks.
No intermediate stuff. No intermediate dates. You know, and they're like, hey, we need to have intermediate dates so that we can show you're on schedule and making progress to the EPA. You know, that's basically what it is. But those intermediate dates all come with a hammer, essentially, if you don't hit them. You know, you're not proceeding.
Marianne, anything? Chris?
No.
Kevin? No. Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks, Greg.
Don't go away.
Yeah, stick around. We're going to have another round with you just a moment. Preparation plans specifications for wastewater tertiary treatment facilities.
This is right on the heels of the last discussion. This would be approving and authorizing the design of the filtration system. And as Greg just explained, it's in the permit, it's going to happen. And in discussing this with Greg, we felt that it would be a good faith effort when we go to the board tomorrow to tell them that this board last night has already taken the positive step of approving the design for the filtration. We are moving forward with it, and hopefully they can see that work we've been doing and give us a break on some of these time situations that we have on the sheet that Greg has discussed. So if you have any questions regarding the filtration itself, Greg, we can answer those.
But I mean, we've kind of discussed this. We know it's coming. We know it's not something we're going to be able to avoid. So I mean, I don't have any questions.
Yeah, I haven't been privileged to that, so I don't want to spend 3 hours going through all this. But just the thumbnail sketch of this, based on the design, the time, the 1,000 hours that your firm's going to need to just design this, what makes it that complex that you need that much design time?
Okay, so the master plan selected what they call continuous upflow backwash filter. So if you think about a filter, if you run dirty water through it, the filter grabs the dirty water. and then you have to be able to get the dirty water back out of there to keep using the filter, right? So you need a method of getting that water back out, and then you have a dirty water stream you got to do something with, okay? So what they do is we have to build, you know, so a filter cell would be like, you know, one filter cell would be like the size of this whole desk in a circle in diameter, you know, so your little arrangement here, okay? And then you're going to filter water through it. Now you imagine this filter cell is 20 feet deep of sand. All right, and it has different kinds of sand. You know, some of them had different kinds, but this one had the same kind of sand. And then it bubbles air up through it and continually bubbles. All right, so you have to build the containment, concrete containment, to hold the sand. All right, and then there's six of these that come together. And so there's very unique structural geometries that have to occur. So it isn't just like, a square building, you know, per se. So there's a lot of intricate concrete work to hold the filters, and then there's a flocculation tank where water comes in, you add chemicals to it, and it kind of chills, and the flock forms, and then you send it into the filters. There's a lot of custom channels, custom concrete design. So the whole structure is made out of concrete. Mm. So that's a large element of it. And you imagine, it's like the filter walls aren't square, they're octagonal. Okay, so they're octagonal walls, but then you have square walls around the outside. We have to put it about 10 feet in the ground. So we have to dig out, we got to have retaining walls around the outside, and that's just the structural part of it. Okay, then we have to put all the mechanical piping, air piping, and then next to that, we need a chemical facility that feeds chemicals to this building as well. And so that's a whole separate design, you know, just for that chemical building and those chemicals and that amount.
That's in this design.
Yeah. So I mean, everything is needed is in there, but it isn't just like, you know, a canister filter like you might see on a farm, right? You can go by a farm, and on the way over here on the Marsh Creek Road, you know, you can see it. They got a little well, and they got four stainless steel tanks, and just pipe, and done. Okay, take that and make it, you know, 20 feet tall and 20 feet in diameter for each one of those tanks, and build them out of concrete, and then run them continuously and pull the dirt off continuously, and, you know, you get a more complex
system. Yeah, that's exactly what I needed to understand, because I didn't realize the concrete portion of it. I was assuming big tall tanks.
Yeah.
Stick them in the ground.
Yeah,
some
but we
pipe
already
in them,
confirmed.
Put some motors on them.
You know, with Parks and his manufactured equipment, it's like it'll be way cheaper out of concrete than it's going to be out of stainless tanks. Those tanks could be huge. You know?
Which therefore it's cheaper to put in the ground than go with towers.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's the life expectancy of concrete?
Well, if you take care of it, it's 40 years. You know, I mean that's you know by normally, everyone says the design life is 20 years, right? Well, Trium plant one's been there for more than 20 years, right? And it's made out of concrete. You have to patch it up. You got to take care of it. For the most part, you can keep on moving down the road for quite a long time with that. You know, so that is generally why, when large water tanks and things are needed, they tend to push to concrete.
Any other questions, Marion? There are no other questions.
Move staff recommendation.
Second.
Any further discussion? Call for the vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Thank you.
Before Greg leaves, if I may, I apologize for getting up and taking that call. But Furman will more than likely not be here this evening due to the fact that we had an SSO on the golf course. They're minor, very small. But not one nonetheless. And so Virgil and Furman are out dealing with it right now. The flows are back in place. But I thought that I would let you know you might want to touch base with those guys.
Okay.
It had to do with the plug that the contractor put in this morning.
You know, it was interesting. I was looking at it this morning, and I actually talked to Veolia at about 4 o'clock today, or 3 o'clock today, and said there doesn't seem to be a lot of flow coming in. I went and looked in that manhole. I said, there's not a lot of flow coming in. I asked him, did you turn Newport pump station back on? Because they turned off Newport pump station to put the plug in. But I'm like, there's not any flow coming in into pump
it's
station.
Out of Cherry Hills?
What's that?
Out of Cherry Hills?
It's on Clubhouse.
Yeah. So so we had an SSO. Okay.
I asked Virgil about size. He said, I don't know. It appears to be around 100 gallons. But some did get into the storm drain.
Newport doesn't pump Clubhouse, does it?
No, Cherry Hills comes underneath the road, but there's a not just Cherry Hill, but I'm in the golf course. So three things come together and then
as it goes back over there. Okay,
yeah, and it comes under the fence and into the pump station does.
Because the lift station runs right down Cherry Hill and then goes over.
Right.
All right. So Rick, you will let us know what's going on.
No, the pumping station.
Hey, you got this one immediately. There was no delay.
All right. Let's move on to item three.
All right.
Thank you, Greg.
Thanks, man.
Countywide Water Wastewater Municipal Service Review and Sphere of Influence Study Review. Staff.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. On March the 4th, Contra Costa LAFCO released their draft MSR as it relates to water and wastewater services in the county, which obviously included the town of Discovery Bay. The study takes place every 5 years. Last one was in 2008, so they're a little bit behind. They've contracted that service out to some consulting firm from Southern California, and they've been reviewing the document, or they've been preparing the document. We received an early draft of that. Sorry, my hand turned on my phone by accident. We received an early draft of that for comments before it goes to final draft, which will be released after the LAFCO meeting on April the 9th. I've attached the sections of the MSR that apply only to Discovery Bay. It's about a 300-page document. When I read through it, I made a number of changes and edits, and there's still some changes and edits that need to be recommended to them with respect to dates and things like that. But all in all, I think when you read through, you'd be pretty pleased that they recommended maintaining status quo. Not every district fared that well. Some of them are recommended to consolidate and to have other more extensive reviews moving forward with their finances and things like that. It is on their website if you wanted to read the entire document, but if what we're looking for this evening is just if you have any additional comments when you read through it, I can take those either tonight or you can get those to me, and I can get those to the LAFCO board prior to their deadline to submit for their April 19th meeting.
So there was no action needed for this? Okay. Any questions?
I've read it. I can't think of anything I need to add.
Kevin, Chris?
No, I'm good.
Okay. Thank you, Rick. We'll move on to nominees for independent special district selection to the Local Agency Formation Commission at LAFCO.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. This is There sits on the LAFCO board two special district members. Not all LAFCOs in the state of California have special district representation on their boards. Contra Costa LAFCO is one of the ones that does, and they have two members that sit on that board. There are two openings right now, one for a regular member and one for their alternate. The regular member is Dwight Meadows of Contra Costa Resource Conservation District, and George Schmidt of West County Wastewater District is the alternate. Both of them are seeking a reappointment to their positions. In addition, a gentleman by the name of Gordon Dakin of the San Ramon Valley Fire Protection District has also been nominated by his district to fill one of the seats, and he's seeking one or the other, and so he's essentially applying for both of them. The meeting will be taking place on April the 21st at 10 a.m. in Martinez, and this board needs to make a recommendation as to who they choose to vote for this appointment. So that's what we're looking for this evening.
I have a question, staff. Did I miss staff contacting the board with regards to whether we wanted to put a nomination forward from our district for LAFCO? Because the deadline was like February 28th, and I don't remember us discussing that.
We sent out an email asking the board if there was any interest prior to that.
Okay. I would make a motion that Dwight Meadows has done a great job. He knows our district, he knows our area also, and we've worked well together with him. I would my recommendation would be that the board support Dwight Meadows and George Schmidt as they stand and reappoint them to the board.
Who's the other one, Kevin?
George Schmidt is the alternate. So they would stay in their same respective positions, with Dwight Meadows being the first and George Schmidt being the alternate.
Was it Schmidt? Is his name?
Schmidt, yes.
I don't know either of them, so I don't know.
I've met both of them.
Does anybody know that Gordon did that?
No, he's
His,
he's not from out here. He's not from East County. He's from San Ramon. San Ramon.
His bio, if you will, is on page...
Is it here?
Yeah, it's on page 41 of 98 on your iPad package.
That's George Schmidt.
That's George Schmidt.
I would lean
towards... Oh, George Schmidt, I'm sorry.
I don't see one.
The other
existing guys are pretty good.
That was the only one we received.
That was the only one we received.
And part of the reason I say that, guys, is because Dwight Meadows is an East County guy. And big in real estate. His son Aaron has also been in the area for a long time. So their family's out in our area rather than have somebody that represents us from the other side of the hill, so to speak.
I would definitely feel more comfortable with somebody from this area.
Yeah, they've been here 100 years, Meadows family. I think they've got a good track record in Oakley, East County.
I'd like to make a motion that we recommend that a representative from our district vote in favor of Aaron Meadows to be the primary and George Smith to be Dwight Meadows to be the primary delegate and that George Smith be the secondary alternate.
Second that.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Call for the vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you.
Okay.
Just as a point, that's a meeting that I normally attend, and I know that Chris is going to be the voting representative, which is fine.
That's what I was going to say. Is Mark not? We just have to make sure that we let them know. Are you going to go?
I can be there, but we're just going to mail in our vote.
No. You have to be there. You have to have a quorum. It's a quorum.
You're going.
I'm going.
Bill's going.
All right, perfect. Thanks, Bill.
Well, so I would suggest that we put Bill as the primary and Chris as the alternate on that in case for some reason Bill can't go. Because we have to name an all. And it's important that we get over 50% plus one to vote our vote, or else it doesn't. It's not a quorum. So it's important to be there.
Okay, so, all right. I'll be there.
Thank you.
We called for the vote already. We already passed that. So let's move on to... Item 5, adopt resolution number 2014-06, establishing a recreational and team league rules and fees.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. This item is coming before you as we are getting ready to establish, to roll out some leagues for this season, an adult softball league, an adult bocce ball league, and also for the River Otter swim team. So the policies and procedures are attached to the report, as well as the fee schedule that's attached to that, and the adopting resolution has all that information included in it. Dan is here this evening. Dan Mewis is here this morning, our Recreation and Parks Coordinator. If you have any questions regarding the teams or the leagues or how it's being set up and established, and he can be able to, and Dan can answer any of your questions you might have.
Start over here at Marianne. Any questions?
I have none, thank you.
Bill?
How were the fees determined? And then along with that, the only two questions I have, how were the fees determined for the different recreation opportunities and the starting times of the games and things like that?
So I went off a lot of the fees of what I've done in the past, and I kind of adjusted to what we have available here in Discovery Bay. The fees are comparable to a lot of the other organizations in the area, without the exception since we don't have lights, so I compensated for that and I dropped them a little bit. For softball, we only have one field, and without the lights, we really only have time to play games at 6:45 p.m. until it gets dark. For bocce ball, I'm kind of doing the same kind of structure and playing them on the same nights, so I can have the staff kind of co-mingle, and we only have to use one staff for each activity.
Well, that brings up my question I didn't know I'd have. How about parking? If you're going to do two things at one time, do we have adequate parking in the area?
There should be plenty of parking for the softball on the one end by the tennis courts, and then with bocce being not as big of an activity, I'm assuming that the parking on the street level and the other area by the shaded structure should be sufficient.
If we have a parking problem, then we're successful.
Well, we have Little League games out there all the time, and there's plenty of problems with their kids, or there's probably more people for that, and they overflow into the Willow Lake Road.
This is not part of another league. Would we be competing? But is this an inner city, so to speak, league?
This would be, I mean, it would be primarily for Discovery Bay residents, but I am anticipating people from Brentwood or possibly Oakley coming over and playing as well.
But we're competing against other residents. It's a league in Discovery Bay. If we're not competing against Brentwood or we're not competing against other leagues.
It's just a walk-on.
It's a league here.
It's just a recreational league. It would be, perfect. I guess, somewhat competing against Brentwood, but it's, you know.
I mean, actually in the games.
No, yeah. It would be strictly for.
So it's not, you're not part of an IFAA or anything, or an IS or something. You're not part of another larger league where you're doing travel games and all that.
No.
It's all right here.
Every game will be played at Cornell Park.
There we go. I think that's what I was trying to ask.
And there will be a Town of Discovery Bay softball team.
So.
Get ready.
I'll be the bartender.
Get your bat.
Chris, anything?
No, that's it, right? Sounds fun, looks good.
Yeah. Okay, then I need a motion.
I'll make a motion, we accept the proposal.
Second. Thank you. Any further discussion? Call for the vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you. Okay, I'm going to move the informational item only. Rick, do you want any discussion here for the district financial statement report?
The only reason I normally would put this on consent, but I'm bringing it on to you at this point in time this evening because it's the first time you've seen one in quite some time. Due to the transition, the conversion from QuickBooks to Excel, it was a fairly lengthy conversion process. We did find an error after this was published that Dean is working on with the vendor, and that's being resolved as we speak. So if you have any questions regarding it, but it should show you what our revenues are, what our expenditures are, and more importantly for you guys to know is how much money we actually have in the bank. And that's something that we really haven't been able to answer definitively for a while. We're able to do that now. So this will be coming to you quarterly, and it will be coming to you from here on out on the consent calendar. If you have any questions when it comes up, you can obviously pull it at any point in time.
Thank you.
And Dean is here to answer any questions you may have with respect to the finances.
Are there any questions?
Yeah.
No.
I reviewed it. I think it's a good, it's excellent for us to see it on a quarterly basis. I mean, this is our main charge of fiduciary thing. And the errors that were on there have been explained to me to my satisfaction. So hopefully we'll have those corrected shortly.
Kevin?
Good.
You go. Chris?
Yeah, looks good. Thanks.
I'm fine with it.
Dean, okay. Can I ask you a quick question? When that gets corrected, would we be able to? What do you think the time frame for that's going to be?
I don't.
Okay. We'll try and get it. We'll try and get it once it does get corrected to send it out to the board electronically off agenda.
Audit. I demanded it be done before audit. So I also had a few other little demands too.
Okay.
Good.
Request.
Thank you.
Can I
get this sent to me? This is an independent file or anything?
Yeah.
Just email me the whole file so I can put it into my folder.
Yes.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to move on, and I'm going to dispense with the old use report. We'll move that to our next meeting.
I can show you the numbers if you want.
I think we'll just assume that's ready. Okay, manager's report.
Just for the record, under management reports, I already made the notice and gave you the information received earlier this evening regarding the spill over on Clubhouse Drive. And as soon as I get more information on that, I will notify the board.
Anything else?
Oh, yes. We had a very successful open house last night at the community center. You were all there, so you all know what took place. The picture's up on the screen. And I would like to especially thank Dan and Monica and Farron for all their work, and Esteban and Corey and all the efforts. I think you all saw just the boards that went up and the pictures. There was a little bit of time and effort that went into it, and I think it was a very successful event, and thank you for your participation.
It was very good. Thank you. Anything else, man? Oh, District Legal.
Nothing, sir.
Thank you so much. Committee updates. We have nothing for the Community Center. There's no written report.
No.
Thank you. Correspondence, there's nothing stands out there. Public records, none. Future agenda items. Marianne, anything?
I'm going to mention, I don't know whether it should be a future agenda item, but it was on the news that Contra Costa County is limiting or wanting to limit the use of sprinkling your yards and things like that. And I didn't know whether that should be something that we get involved in or not. And then there was another article about the water meters, which I know that Rick sent us an article on it, how people without water meters are kind of sucking up more water and there's no restrictions. So Just throwing it out.
Are you saying you want to put water meters on the agenda, Mary Ann?
No, no, I'm just...
You can put it on there.
I can take that off.
You cannot?
Yes, I can.
The board voted at the workshop.
We can vote, you don't have that kind of luck with that.
The board voted at the February workshop, or the board gave direction at the February workshop to come back within approximately 6 months with a, strategic plan, if you will, for a water meter rollout program for the board to consider. So it will be coming back to the board based upon that meeting.
Yeah, I was thinking more of the thing on Contra Costa County, limiting the use of water. I know.
We could put something in our, on our website about water consumption, at least to keep it out there with conservation.
Well, a little note in the, pipeline newsletter that's coming out next month or whenever.
It was in there.
Yeah, and the new newsletter, I actually got a very preliminary draft of it yesterday, and it is, it's looking pretty good. So I should have a final, hopefully next week I can be able to send you.
Along that same line, I think it would be appropriate to mention something about meters in the newsletter, stating something to the fact that, you know, with the drought, the board is advancing our state mandate and we'll have an update in 6-8 months or something. Just to let people know that meters are on the way.
I would run for re-election that year.
Wait, I don't have, I don't have a problem with that, but I'm still waiting for some comments from the other board.
Yeah, no. I wanted to be the, you got to hire a bodyguard, you put that in the paper.
It was in the paper.
Yeah. Oh, well, you tell me you're going to put
it in the paper. Point of order, these are just future agenda items up for discussion.
That's true, correct. Okay, any other future agenda items?
For me.
Okay, in that case, we're adjourned.
Gavel that bad boy.
I just did.